7. He was cheerful and serene. Perhaps something very pleasant had happened to him, of which we knew nothing as yet, but he seemed particularly contented. "Do you forgive me, Nicholas?" Varvara Petrovna hastened to say, and got up suddenly to meet him. But Nicholas positively laughed. "Just as I thought," he said, good-humouredly and jestingly. "I see you know about it already. When I had gone from here, I reflected in the carriage that I ought at least to have told you the story instead of going off like that. But when I remembered that Pyotr Stepanovitch was still here, I thought no more of it." As he spoke, he took a cursory look round. "Pyotr Stepanovitch told us an old Petersburg episode in the life of a queer fellow," Varvara Petrovna rejoined enthusiastically. "A mad and capricious fellow, though always lofty in his feelings, always chivalrous and noble." "Chivalrous? You don't mean to say it's come to that," laughed Nicholas. "However, I'm very grateful to Pyotr Stepanovitch for being in such a hurry this time." He exchanged a rapid glance with the latter. "You must know, maman, that Pyotr Stepanovitch is the universal peacemaker. That's his part in life, his weakness, his hobby, and I particularly recommend him to you from that point of view. I can guess what a yarn he's been spinning. He's a great hand at spinning them. He has a perfect record office in his head. He's such a realist, you know, that he can't tell a lie, and prefers truthfulness to effect, except, of course, in special cases, when effect is more important than truth." As he said this, he was still looking about him. "So you see clearly, maman, that it's not for you to ask my forgiveness, and if there's any craziness about this affair, it's my fault, and it proves that, when all's said and done, I really am mad. I must keep up my character here." Then he tenderly embraced his mother. "In any case, the subject has been fully discussed and is done with," he added. And there was a rather dry and resolute note in his voice. Varvara Petrovna understood that note, but her exultation was not damped, quite the contrary. "I didn't expect you for another month, Nicholas." "I will explain everything to you, maman, of course. But now..." And he went towards Praskovya Ivanovna. But she scarcely turned her head towards him, though she had been completely overwhelmed by his first appearance. Now she had fresh anxieties to think of. At the moment the captain had stumbled upon Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch as he was going out, Liza had suddenly begun laughing, at first quietly and intermittently, but her laughter grew more and more violent, louder and more conspicuous. She flushed crimson, in striking contrast with her gloomy expression just before. While Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch was talking to Varvara Petrovna, she had twice beckoned to Mavriky Nikolaevich, as though she wanted to whisper something to him. But as soon as the young man bent down to her, she instantly burst into laughter, so that it seemed as though it was at poor Mavriky Nikolaevich that she was laughing. She evidently tried to control herself, however, and put her handkerchief to her lips. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch turned to greet her with a most innocent and open-hearted air. "Please excuse me," she responded, speaking quickly. You've seen Mavriky Nikolaevich, of course. My goodness, how inexcusably tall you are, Mavriky Nikolaevich!" And laughter again. Mavriky Nikolaevich was tall, but by no means inexcusably so. "Have you been here long?" she muttered, restraining herself again, genuinely embarrassed, though her eyes were shining. "More than 2 hours," answered Nicholas, looking at her intently. I may remark that he was exceptionally reserved and courteous, but that apart from his courtesy, his expression was utterly indifferent, even listless. "And where are you going to stay?" "Here." Varvara Petrovna, too, was watching Liza, but she was suddenly struck by an idea. "Where have you been all this time, Nicholas? More than 2 hours," she said, going up to him. "The train comes in at 10 o'clock." "I first took Pyotr Stepanovitch to Kirillov's. I came across Pyotr Stepanovich at Matveyev, 3 stations away, and we travelled together. I had been waiting at Matveyev since sunrise, put in Pyotr Stepanovich. The last carriages of our train ran off the rails in the night, and we nearly had our legs broken.
Your legs broken? Cried Liza. Maman, maman, you and I meant to go to Matveyev last week. We should have broken our legs, too.
Heaven have mercy on us, cried Praskovya Ivanovna, crossing herself.
Maman, maman, dear maman, you mustn't be frightened if I break both my legs. It may so easily happen to me. You say yourself that I ride so recklessly every day. Mavriky Nikolaevich, will you go about with me when I'm lame?
She began giggling again.
If it does happen, I won't let anyone take me about but you. You can reckon on that. Well, suppose I break only one leg. Come, be polite. Say you'll think it a pleasure.
A pleasure to be crippled, said Mavriky Nikolaevich, frowning gravely.
But then you'll lead me about. Only you, and no one else.
Even then it'll be you leading me about, Lizaveta Nikolaevna, murmured Mavriky Nikolaevich, even more gravely.
Why, he's trying to make a joke, cried Liza, almost in dismay. Mavriky Nikolaevich, don't you ever dare take to that. But what an egoist you are.
I am certain that, to your credit, you're slandering yourself. It will be quite the contrary. From morning till night you'll assure me that I have become more charming for having lost my leg. There's one insurmountable difficulty. You're so fearfully tall, and when I've lost my leg I shall be so very tiny. How will you be able to take me on your arm? We shall look a strange couple. And she laughed hysterically. Her jests and insinuations were feeble, but she was not capable of considering the effect she was producing. Hysterics, Pyotr Stepanovich whispered to me. A glass of water. Make haste. He was right. A minute later, everyone was fussing about. Water was brought. Liza embraced her mother, kissed her warmly, wept on her shoulder, then, drawing back and looking her in the face, she fell to laughing again. The mother, too, began whimpering. Varvara Petrovna made haste to carry them both off to her own rooms, going out by the same door by which Daria Pavlovna had come to us. But they were not away long, not more than 4 minutes. I'm trying to remember now every detail of these last moments of that memorable morning. I remember that when we were left without the ladies, except Daria Pavlovna, who had not moved from her seat, Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch made the round, greeting us all except Shatov, who still sat in his corner, his head more bowed than ever. Stepan Trofimovitch was beginning something very witty to Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, but the latter turned away hurriedly to Daria Pavlovna. But before he reached her, Pyotr Stepanovitch caught him and drew him away almost violently towards the window, where he whispered something quickly to him, apparently something very important, to judge by the expression of his face and the gestures that accompanied the whisper. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch listened inattentively and listlessly with his official smile, and at last even impatiently, and seemed all the time on the point of breaking away. He moved away from the window just as the ladies came back. Varvara Petrovna made Liza sit down in the same seat as before, declaring that she must wait and rest another 10 minutes, and that the fresh air would perhaps be too much for her nerves at once. She was looking after Liza with great devotion, and sat down beside her. Pyotr Stepanovich, now disengaged, skipped up to them at once, and broke into a rapid and lively flow of conversation. At that point, Nikolai Vsyevolodovich at last went up to Daria Pavlovna with his leisurely step. Dasha began stirring uneasily at his approach, and jumped up quickly in evident embarrassment, flushing all over her face. "I believe one may congratulate you. Or is it too soon?" he brought out, with a peculiar line in his face. Dasha made him some answer, but it was difficult to catch it. "Forgive my indiscretion," he added, raising his voice. "But you know I was expressly informed. Did you know about it?"
"Yes, I know that you were expressly informed.
But I hope I have not done any harm by my congratulations," he laughed. "And if Stepan Trofimovich—" "What?"
"'What's the congratulation about?' Pyotr Stepanovich suddenly skipped up to them. "'What are you being congratulated about, Darya Pavlovna?' "'Bah, surely that's not it. Your blush proves I've guessed right. And indeed, what else does one congratulate our charming and virtuous young ladies on? And what congratulations make them blush most readily? Well, accept mine too, then, if I've guessed right. And pay up. Do you remember when we were in Switzerland? You bet you'd never be married. Oh, yes. Apropos of Switzerland, what am I thinking about? Only fancy. That's half what I came about, and I was almost forgetting it. Tell me. He turned quickly to Stepan Trofimovich. When are you going to Switzerland?
I? To Switzerland? Stepan Trofimovich replied, wondering and confused.
What, aren't you going? Why, you're getting married too, you wrote.
Pierre! Cried Stepan Trofimovich.
Well, why Pierre? You see, if that'll please you, I've flown here to announce that I'm not at all against it, since you were set on having my opinion as quickly as possible, and if indeed, he pattered on, you want to be saved, as you wrote, beseeching my help in the same letter, I am at your service again. Is it true that he is going to be married, Varvara Petrovna? He turned quickly to her. I hope I'm not being indiscreet. He writes himself that the whole town knows it, and everyone's congratulating him, so that, to avoid it, he only goes out at night. I've got his letters in my pocket. But would you believe it, Varvara Petrovna? I can't make head or tail of it. Just tell me one thing, Stepan Trofimovich. Are you to be congratulated, or are you to be saved? You wouldn't believe it. In one line he's despairing, and in the next he's most joyful. To begin with, he begs my forgiveness. Well, of course, that's their way, though it must be said. Fancy, the man's only seen me twice in his life, and then by accident. And suddenly now, when he's going to be married for the third time, he imagines that this is a breach of some sort of parental duty to me, and entreats me 1,000 miles away not to be angry and to allow him to. Please don't be hurt, Stepan Trofimovich. It's characteristic of your generation. I take a broad view of it, and don't blame you. And let's admit it does you honour and all the rest. But the point is, again, that I don't see the point of it. There's something about some sort of sins in Switzerland. I'm getting married, he says, for my sins, or on account of the sins of another, or whatever it is. Sins, anyway. The girl, he says, is a pearl and a diamond, and, well, of course, he's unworthy of her. It's their way of talking. But on account of some sins or circumstances, he is obliged to lead her to the altar and go to Switzerland and therefore abandon everything and fly to save me. Do you understand anything of all that? However, I notice from the expression of your faces... He turned about with the letter in his hand, looking with an innocent smile into the faces of the company, that as usual I seem to have put my foot in it, through my stupid way of being open, or, as Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch says, being in a hurry. I thought, of course, that we were all friends here. That is, your friends, Stepan Trofimovich, your friends. I am really a stranger, and I see that you all know something, and that just that something I don't know. He still went on looking about him. So Stepan Trofimovich wrote to you that he was getting married for the sins of another committed in Switzerland, and that you were to fly here to save him, in those very words, said Varvara Petrovna, addressing him suddenly. Her face was yellow and distorted, and her lips were twitching. Well, you see, if there's anything I've not understood, said Pyotr Stepanovich, as though in alarm, talking more quickly than ever. It's his fault, of course, for writing like that. Here's the letter. You know, Varvara Petrovna, his letters are endless and incessant, and you know for the last 2 or 3 months there has been letter upon letter, till, I must own, at last I sometimes didn't read them through. Forgive me, Stepan Trofimovich, for my foolish confession, but you must admit, please, that although you addressed them to me, you wrote them more for posterity, so that you really can't mind. Come, come, don't be offended. We're friends anyway. But this letter, Varvara Petrovna, this letter I did read through. These sins of another, are probably some little sins of our own, and I don't mind betting very innocent ones, though they have suddenly made us take a fancy to work up a terrible story with a glamour of the heroic about it, and it's just for the sake of that glamour we've got it up. You see, there's something a little lame about our accounts, it must be confessed, in the end. We've a great weakness for cards, you know. But this is unnecessary, quite unnecessary. I'm sorry I chatter too much. But upon my word, Varvara Petrovna, he gave me a fright, and I really was half prepared to save him. He really made me feel ashamed. Did he expect me to hold a knife to his throat, or what? Am I such a merciless creditor? He writes something here of a dowry. But are you really going to get married, Stepan Trofimovitch? That would be just like you, to say a lot for the sake of talking. Ach, Varvara Petrovna, I'm sure you must be blaming me now, and just for my way of talking, too. On the contrary, on the contrary. I see that you are driven out of all patience, and no doubt you have had good reason, Varvara Petrovna answered spitefully. She had listened with spiteful enjoyment to all the candid outbursts of Pyotr Stepanovitch, who was obviously playing a part. What part I did not know then, but it was unmistakable, and overacted indeed. On the contrary, she went on, I am only too grateful to you for speaking, but for you I might not have known of it. My eyes are opened for the first time for 20 years. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, you said just now that you had been expressly informed. Surely Stepan Trofimovitch hasn't written to you in the same style. I did get a very harmless and very generous letter from him. You hesitate. You pick out your words. That's enough. Stepan Trofimovitch, I request a great favour from you. She suddenly turned to him with flashing eyes. Kindly leave us at once, and never set foot in my house again. I must beg the listener to remember her recent exaltation, which had not yet passed. It's true that Stepan Trofimovitch was terribly to blame, but what was a complete surprise to me then was the wonderful dignity of his bearing under his son's accusation, which he had never thought of interrupting, and before Varvara Petrovna's denunciation. How did he come by such spirit? I only found out one thing, that he had certainly been deeply wounded at his first meeting with Petrusha, by the way he had embraced him. It was a deep and genuine grief, at least in his eyes and to his heart. He had another grief at the same time, that is, the poignant consciousness of having acted contemptibly. He admitted this to me afterwards with perfect openness. And you know, real genuine sorrow will sometimes make even a phenomenally frivolous, unstable man solid and stoical, for a short time at any rate. What's more, even fools are by genuine sorrow turned into wise men, also only for a short time, of course. It is characteristic of sorrow. And if so, what might not happen with a man like Stepan Trofimovitch? It worked a complete transformation, though also only for a time, of course. He bowed with dignity to Varvara Petrovna without uttering a word. There was nothing else left for him to do, indeed. He was on the point of going out without a word, but could not refrain from approaching Darya Pavlovna. She seemed to foresee that he would do so, for she began speaking of her own accord herself, in utter dismay, as though in haste to anticipate him. "Please, Stepan Trofimovitch, for God's sake, don't say anything." She began speaking with haste and excitement, with a look of pain in her face, hurriedly stretching out her hands to him. "Be sure that I still respect you as much, and think just as highly of you, and think well of me too, Stepan Trofimovitch. That will mean a great deal to me. A great deal." Stepan Trofimovitch made her a very, very low bow. "It's for you to decide, Darya Pavlovna. You know that you are perfectly free in the whole matter. You have been, and you are now, and you always will be," Varvara Petrovna concluded impressively. "Bah! Now I understand it all," cried Pyotr Stepanovitch, slapping himself on the forehead. But what a position I am put in by all this. Darya Pavlovna, please forgive me. What do you call your treatment of me, eh?" he said, addressing his father. "Pierre, you might speak to me differently, mightn't you, my boy?" Stepan Trofimovitch observed quite quietly. "Don't cry out, please," said Pierre, with a wave of his hand. "Believe me, it's all your sick old nerves, and crying out will do no good at all. You'd better tell me instead. Why didn't you warn me, since you might have supposed I should speak out at the first chance?"
Stepan Trofimovitch looked searchingly at him. "Pierre, you who know so much of what goes on here, can you really have known nothing of this business, and have heard nothing about it?"
"What? What a set! So it's not enough to be a child in your old age. You must be a spiteful child, too. Varvara Petrovna, did you hear what he said?"
There was a general outcry, but then, suddenly, an incident took place, which no one could have anticipated.